You're listening to the Make It British podcast. I'm Kate Hills, and I'm on a one-woman mission to save UK manufacturing. In 2008, I gave up my 20-year career as a fashion buyer because I was disillusioned with how much was being sourced overseas, and I set out to uncover some of the amazing businesses that are still making in the UK. Since founding Make It British, I've discovered that there is not only still tons of manufacturing taking place in Britain, but that it's a thriving industry. I invite you to join me each week when I'll be chatting to inspiring British-made brands and UK manufacturers and offering advice to product-based businesses that make in the UK. So with no further ado, let's get on with the show. Hello and welcome to episode number 296 of the Make It British podcast. So a couple of weeks ago, I took a little trip up to Edinburgh. I actually went up there with my daughter because she was looking at Edinburgh College of Art. And so, of course, I thought I'm not going to miss the opportunity to go in and see a factory while I'm up here. No trip with me doesn't include some sort of factory visit. My daughter is very used to it. Whenever we go anywhere, I drag around factories. So this time we went to Edinburgh, we hopped on the train to a place called Dunfermline, and we went to see Adam Robertson and Nina Falk, who run KC Manufacturing. You might know KC Manufacturing. They were previously called Colopsia Collective. They used to exhibit at my Meet the Manufacturer trade show every year. Adam has been on a guest on this podcast before, years ago, probably about 2019, 2020, when he was last on this podcast. So I thought I'd go and see them and see their amazing 8,000 square foot setup that they've got in Dunfermline. They're doing lots of very exciting things, as well as making accessories. They're now also dipping their toe in the water when it comes to making clothing as well. And I thought I would find out a little bit more about how Nina and Adam are getting on, what their plans are for the factory, and hear a little bit more about their story and about their hopes to grow textile manufacturing in Scotland again. So here you go. It was a tour around the factory. I've managed to get out most of the background noise. Some bits of the audio are a little bit wobbly, but I hope you enjoyed this visit that I took to KC Manufacturing in Dunfermline. Here you go.
What's your background, Adam? I know you told me on the podcast last time, which I will link to with this one, is the old podcast you did. Everyone can hear how much you've grown up since I last spoke to you.
So I grew up in Leicester. My mum was one of the lead designers for Cora, if anyone knows Cora. So I kind of grew up in the death of UK textiles. It was that thing, late 80s, early 90s, and just factories falling by the wayside. So I kind of always grew up in an area where there was a lot of people around that did have jobs and suddenly didn't, and dealing with the aftermath of some of the poor management, offshoring, and all those things that contributed to those situations, and really got a feel for the fact that we needed to do this stuff better and well, and that misunderstanding and lowering of the skill of textiles workers. I mean, this is skilled work. It's engineering. You know, you're working with industrial equipment every day, and it just wasn't seen that way when I was growing up. So I got a bit of a chip on my shoulder about that. And because my family's, part of my family's Scottish, my granddad was at Singer Sewing Machines. When we moved back to Scotland, it then became that moment of like, right, well, we need to do something about this. The situation's still getting worse, even, you know, 20, 30 years on. We need to kind of put our stake down and say, no, we can, there is a way of doing this well in the UK. And I hope we found it.
You want to just explain the sort of products that you are making here at Colopsia?
Absolutely. So we have our set collection of standardized products that you can see on our website. They're primarily accessories, homeware, cushion covers, things like that, accessory bags, all sorts of different bits and pieces, into bucket hats. They're still there. They're still orderable through the website, or, you know, through email as well if people want to do that. But the big thing we're working on now is an outerwear collection. And effectively a factory collection, if you like, in that more traditional sense of, with the fabrics we have in the materials library, being able to order things off the peg that are preset. But we're also doing a lot of custom development for outerwear as well.
All right, do you want to do me the tour, Adam, then? Where should we start?
The main interesting, exciting bit is the production space.
It's huge.
It is huge. It's we were very lucky to find it. From a lot of the factories we've seen, this is one of the nicer.
It is one of the nice. I think it's one of the nicest UK factories I've seen, Adam. And it was a nice little walk through a lovely park from Dunfermline Railway Station, half an hour out of Edinburgh.
Yeah, the light in this space is beautiful as well. It lends itself to photography. And even in terms of that messaging, because if you're selling made in the UK, you need to be telling that story. Yeah. This space is really helpful for that.
Yeah.
And anyone brings a camera in here, it just instantly looks lovely. So it does help.
And I'm personally loving all the orange touches that you've got here on all the rails and your signage. Big fan of orange.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we still have the cutting table from the show, our first show with you that we bought off the stand, because it was on ban for us at that point.
Yeah.
From EA a long time ago. So that would have been 2016. So all the rest of our equipment's been powder coated to match that original one as well.
That's my orange colour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's quite literally your orange colour. Yeah.
Brilliant.
But yeah, it's lovely. Lovely to have that little nod again. Yeah. And again, work with great supplies in the UK for the machines as well. But come on through and I can show you a little bit of the space as well. So you've got a few orders that are on the side here ready to be QC'd for people. Most stuff goes out the same day, so there's not often stuff sat there. And these are kind of these are our set garment styles, so going back to the original kind of dresses, you know, bolero tops, things like that we were doing originally, and adding in the jackets as well. And over on the right, these are our sort of working samples for all the accessories. So if you're ordering our standardized products, there's, you know, set standards for those. And again, they just get checked against those when they go out. But there's about 75 products in that range now, and we're always tweaking and adding things to make sure it's as market relevant as possible.
So just to describe what you've got there, you've got like barrel bags, tote bags, hats.
Yeah, bucket hats, sun hats. We can do little things like scrunchies and tiny pouch bags to really use up any end of roll or surplus material. I think we've got something like 15 different versions as standard of like a shopper bag, tote bag style thing. We've got all the strapping, all those things for the supplies, all ready to go, lining, zips, everything's there. You can just get those off the peg nice and easy. And then backpacks, well, the large drawstring bags, again, everything can be developed and changed as needed. So we sell a lot of those as shoe bags, you know, for different sports applications. Yeah, there's lots of different ways to utilize the range. But again, they're building blocks to kind of help. We all know what it's like. You spend your time getting those big staple pieces for your brand sorted, and then you go, oh, no, actually, I need all these other things as well. They're ready to go.
Brilliant.
So again, yeah, it's just a more cohesive service, hopefully. And then we have our kind of standard machines down the left wall here. We try and keep everything simple on the machinery. So the accessory range can be made completely with lock stitch, overlock, heat presses, and a ratchet press for press studs. When we're getting into the garments, we have some more complicated machinery as well.
Yeah, you need new machine.
Of course. So we got a lot of that in already, and there's a few bits we're still developing. But again, we want to keep that simple. So we never get stuff in until we know we're going to use it. And we're very clever and canny is probably a good word for it about our construction to make sure we can do everything, because you know what it's like. You end up with machines, they get used once a year, they sit there, it's just not worth doing that.
Have you got things like keyhole buttonhole, or is that
we have our first buttonhole is here, keyhole's on the way, and the button stitch is on the way as well, and bar tack, there's lots of things that are on the way like that as well. But again, once we've got those, there's pretty much that's everything covered, really. We need to go any crazier than that. I know you can get into seam taping and all those sorts of things, but that's a whole different ballgame from what we're looking to do, really. And so it's just very, very much still about making simple things well.
Good quality, made to last, simple construction.
And that's the great thing about Nina, my business partner, who heads up all that construction. It's that very Swedish simplicity kind of way of doing things. Because the way they teach pattern construction and all those things is completely different to the way you do it in the UK.
Is it?
Yeah, it's much more about functionality and simplicity. That can be challenging at times when Nina's coming in with different techniques to what people have been trained. And I guess challenging some of those assumptions we make about garment construction. Sometimes we get a bit het up with tradition without ever asking whether that's the best way, the simplest way. Whereas a lot of what we do here is about challenging some of that and going, is there a different way we can put pockets onto a pattern so that we don't have to pin things and have to do things like that. We can just put things together.
Make it quicker.
Exactly. Yeah. But also not affect in any way the end product. It's that thing. Or if anything, make it more consistent.
because labour costs in the UK are obviously higher. I suppose probably are in Sweden, which is probably why Sweden has developed this method of making things which are simplified.
It's just in their mentality as well. They're not about frills and excess. It's very much about making things work. And that's often where the beauty is. You know, it's that kind of clean lines, good. And you also can't hide then as well.
No.
If there's no additions on a product, if the shape's wrong, you spot it straight away. Exactly. So that is the counterpoint to that. It means we do have to work with good stuff. That's why we're working with sort of, you know, Halley's and British Millerine and all sorts of different people around the UK to really get the best quality stuff in. And there are some great suppliers in the UK still. It's we do need to be linking that up. So definitely, we're making the most of it.
Excellent. So all those contacts you made from my show back in the day then.
Oh, yeah. No, but that's the thing. And that was always what was great about Make It British, particularly that pre-COVID time, was getting everyone in the same room, particularly when you're in Scotland. It isn't that far away, but it sometimes feels like it when we even like Caledonian Quilting that we're working with quite closely now. We met them first at the show. It was a long time ago, but it's good. Yeah. We need that. It's all about joining stuff up. Again, being in Scotland, people want to come here. So if we've got a central hub where people can come and look at fabrics that they might not be able to get to the factory, or again, see it in context of a garment, because again, and seeing a little swatch that a factory sent you is one thing, but seeing it in a full garment that you could try on, completely different experience.
So what's it like, Nina, working, how do you, like you're Adam's wife, what's it like working together as a husband and wife, factory owners, in the business together? How do you make it work? Do each of you do different parts of the whole business?
Yeah, we have very different roles in the business. I think we listen to each other. The only arguments we have in our relationship is actually about the business, never anything outside the business. And it could be really good about being frustrated about things, because we are really good at like maybe tackling that in a way where we are trying to understand why you annoy with this. And we have an argument and then we analyze that.
You've had to be really mindful of it. I think that, and it's a good thing to have in business owners, that thing of, with staff and with clients as well, that we're always trying to understand why the other one's annoyed and then deal with that proactively. But yeah, Nina's role is very much the production. Nina's the kind of the heart of the business.
Yeah,
like
she's
the one that gets the stuff done. And I'm just the other stuff. It's all the things that you need to have in place, accounts and client management stuff and all that. That's my role within it.
So all the talking.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yes.
I get wheeled out to do these things normally. Well, Nina's doing the problem.
Face out.
So you're the behind the scenes. So you're actually the woman running the factory then, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. He is also much younger than me. So I'm in charge. So I think we just been, even at uni many, many, many years ago, we had this relationship as well. So we had a project and we'd running those together. And from this first day at uni, we have been very good at being open with each other, asking for inspiration. And I think we had a really good relationship when it came to like work ethics for a long time, and then from there we grew into being
factory owners.
Exactly.
Well, we pride ourselves on, a lot of people don't realize that we are a couple when they first meet us. And that's, again,
giving the bag away on the
no, that's fine. Like, it's good. It's a family-owned business. It's that kind of mentality. But I think that's really good that we've got a very clear, like a break between our work relationship and our personal relationship, and they are different.
Mm-hmm. So you don't come in here to work at the weekends?
Oh, we still
do that,
yeah.
All the time. But then we have actually bring our daughter in, and she was brought up on the factory floor during COVID. So she was lying under the floor when we were sewing face masks. And so she was very used to the machines, and she's very happy running around here in, you know,
within the health and safety.
Yeah, obviously kids aren't working in this factory.
No, kids work in the factory. But she's very happy and she loves sewing machines and she loves textiles. She wants to make and she's very creative. And we encourage that quite a lot.
So she'll take over the factory when she's older?
I hope so. She's got to do something to make some money. That's the...
But I think it's quite nice to see Adam's mum working there in the factory. Then it's us working in the factory and our daughter. So it's quite nice to see different generations actually helping and being very excited about textiles and everything.
So important.
Yeah. Brilliant. Oh, it's really cute. Nina, tell me a little bit about your background. How did you get into all of this then?
So I did a tailoring degree in Stockholm. many years ago. When I was 18, I opened up a shop in the center of Stockholm. I was running there for a few years. Then I wanted to see something else, and I wanted to know more about maybe the textile and maybe not about the fashion so much. So I went to Africa, lived there for a while. And whilst in Africa, I applied for Norwich University of the Arts.
To do another degree.
I met Adam, did textile. And then I went into my master in Edinburgh. I did contemporary art theory and applied that to what we are doing today. So, yeah.
Wow. So do you have lots of people come to visit? And whereabouts do your clients come from? Your customers are all over the world, aren't they?
They are, yes. We wish there was more Scottish ones, but it's always that thing. For the accessory, smaller scale stuff, we do a lot with the Scottish brands. But yeah, for those large scale orders, it tends to be America, Europe, Japan, that sort of stuff. Or for British supplies that are selling out there, we do a lot of that sort of stuff as well.
That doesn't surprise me that you're doing a lot of export for those sorts of clients.
Absolutely. They care about the made in Scottish thing as well as the make it made in British.
It is
very much that label of that stamp of quality. And again, we need to put that back into the garments because it's there for the materials, but also we need to be making the product here in Scotland. I get very, very frustrated seeing woven in Scotland labels and, you know,
exactly.
Where was the product made?
No, I think I've spotted some Harris tweed here somewhere. Did I see?
Yeah. There'll be Harris here. There'll be Lovett and Buttes. I'm trying to think of the other ones now.
What's Hallie's? Stevenson's.
Hallie Stevenson, our tons of it. I mean, you can see it all up on the wall here. They're a great supplier.
Brilliant. And
we work a lot with them. I'm blanking on ones now that I shouldn't be mentioning. Loch Aaron, Norton Group, so that's House of Edgar, Johnston's, all of them there. We see all of that stuff there all the time. And again, it's great that there's that network of suppliers. It's a good base for us all to work with. And you can cover a lot of bases with that, particularly as people are moving more away from polycottons. You're getting into performance, exactly, wool and coat cottons is the way it's... Still a lot of challenges around that. I know the PU coatings and stuff like that being banned and all those sorts of things are creating a lot of challenges for brands, but there's ways around it. And again, it's just about clever construction and doing it right. And we can still do some good stuff.
Brilliant. So how many people work here, Adam?
So there was 10 of us at the moment and that number's growing. So I reckon by the end of the year, it's probably going to be closer to 15.
Wow.
That order volume is just skyrocketing at the moment.
You said to me that there's just you and one other garment manufacturer left in Scotland.
As far as I'm aware, I'm going to put a big asterisk on that just in case I'm wrong. But that, from what we're aware of, the people that we know that are at least, you know, there's a profile there that we can see, there seems to be two of us left.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much. We, like you say, we lost another one, D&M Fashions.
Recently, which is a real shame. And again, it's that... There's a lot of questions around their clients and their staff and making sure that there's enough still left for them in Scotland to keep doing those things. Otherwise, we're going to lose those orders. Mm. And again, there's a lot of questions we need to have about how we shore up these services going forward. It feels like that factory model has to change. It's the conversations we were having 6 years ago. And we started that small scale with standardized products, but actually that picture needs to be a lot broader than that. And now we've got the space because we're in about an 8,000 square foot factory here, we do have the space to start having some of those conversations about how we can join a lot of those dots up.
Oh, so you haven't got like the big cutters here yet or anything, have you?
No, because we've not needed it.
No, you haven't.
Again, now we're getting into those bigger orders. They're now things we're working out the logistics of, but there's lots of great, less industrial interventions now. So what we have are essentially battery powered hand cutters, which are really helpful for that kind of those medium levels of kind of stacking of fabrics and things like that. Again, we still do a lot of work with dead stock, overstock, surplus things with faults in it. So you still need that handcraft idea of sometimes we need to check.
Cut single layers
exactly.
Or small pieces.
It's obviously a premium for that.
Yeah.
But as we get into those higher stacks, we are looking at options. But again, you don't necessarily need to have things that are off the mains anymore hanging from the ceiling. You can get the belt ones that are battery powered. So again, we're looking at how we do that as sustainably as possible as well. So there's a lot of decisions we're currently making about how we build that effectively going forward. The biggest challenge here is the ceiling so high.
Exactly. So can't have any wiring hanging from the ceiling.
Yes.
What do you do about lighting in the winter?
So we have all the LED lights. They're great.
Oh, okay.
That plus the natural light is more than enough. It's a bit hard to tell today because it's so nice
and
bright and
sunny. Yeah, it's
but
lovely.
The volume of window we have in here is fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's never been an issue. which again, I think is quite lucky.
So have you had any funding at all to set any of this up? Because setting up an 8,000 square foot not factory does not come cheap.
So no. So the only grant we've had, there's with a bit again with a bit of an asterisk on that. The only straight grant we've had, I think, was for £3,000 from Business Gateway, which is great. All the rest of the money we've had through has been at least part loan funding. So there's a fantastic, because we're a social enterprise, which we're really happy to fly the flag of. I think we're probably one of the largest, if not the largest, social enterprise manufacturer in Scotland. But what's really great about that is that sector's really supported.
Yeah.
And Foundation Scotland, that have put up a lot of the money for us to do this, have been great. And that's all been mostly loaned with a little bit of grant out as an addition. But those sorts of relationships are fantastic. We've not had anything sector specific.
No. I know.
Which I'll leave a very labored pause on the end of that.
Feel your pain.
Yes. There's still a lot of challenges around that. And we need to be doing more to support these things. And again, throwing money at the situation isn't going to make things better. We do need to be thinking more progressively about how we do things as well. But there does need to be more of an acknowledgement, particularly in Scotland, of the value the textiles industry has to the economy in general, and also where it could be if we did a little bit more just to help it along.
Yeah. And other countries get support.
Yes, yes.
For their textile industry.
Yes, I'm not going to say that there's any sexism involved in some of that decision making, but I will also just leave that out there as a comment. Sometimes it's challenging to get people to understand that this is a proper industry and not just us playing around with some fabric. This is serious business and it needs to be looked after, otherwise we'll lose it all. And then where will we be? Where, and particularly with, I know the situation in Europe, in Portugal, Italy is changing, living wage enforcement's changing in a lot of places around the world as well. You know, India and China aren't as cheap as they used to be. They're going to continue to get more expensive. You've then got import and dealing with, you know, either Europe or the Far East or wherever else it might be to deal with. We need to start onshoring, and people are starting to do that.
Just remind me, what year did you set up?
So Collapse has existed since 2012, and we've been manufacturing since 2015. But that's first year, a long time. It's fantastic. But it was very early on. It was me and Nina and a couple of domestic machines and an IKEA table, making a few bits and pieces for people on the side, and it just grew from there, really. So to be in this enormous factory now is fantastic.
All your staff here are really young.
Yes, they are.
So how do you attract people to work here, aside from the fact that you're in a beautiful suburb of Edinburgh, but probably not a hotbed of manufacturing skills? How do you find people to come and work here?
It's a challenge at the best of times, and we do have that kind of 40-year skill gap. That I'm sure you find a lot of as well. There does seem to be, there's people in their 60s working in factories or people in their 20s and kind of no one in between.
Yeah.
We're very lucky in Scotland that we have Heriot Watt in the Borders, where they do have a fashion tech course. So they do actually train people for these sorts of roles-ish. It is still fashion orientated. It's designing for fashion, but they have machine skills.
Ah.
And what they do with us is we take work placements with them every year from their third years. So we help mark that unit. So we're part of the grading process. So they come in here and get an understanding of
how
manufacture works. And we hire, I can't remember what the percentage is. I think it's like 70% of the people we've had through, we've hired, including Emma, who's working here today.
Oh, amazing.
She will finish this month. She's going to come on 2 days a week after that.
Excellent.
Which is fantastic. So
why don't more unis do that?
Exactly. It's such a good opportunity for them to get an understanding of what these environments are like and whether it's right for them. We've had a lot of people come through as well who've gone, no, this isn't actually what I want to do. But we also find there's a lot of people that do want to make and don't want to design, and they feel like they've been hemmed in, textiles pun, hemmed into a design course because that's all that's available. So again, we're doing a lot of stuff around that to try and, first of all, find those people and then train them in the way that we do stuff here. But also now we can do apprenticeships and stuff in this in Scotland. So we're looking at setting that up so we can get young people in straight out of school and get them moving with it. It's a tricky one. One of our big challenges is because our construction techniques and ideas around that are slightly different and traditional, it can be challenging getting people that have worked in other factories, because you then have that thing of
they've been taught a different way.
Exactly. Yeah. And all those years of doing it that way to then have to go, no, we're going to do this differently. Yeah. It can be difficult. So we have had people in the past like that, and we will have more in the future, but it's finding the right people.
Yeah.
But again, you get a feel for it when you're in the space, you know whether this environment's you or not. And we hope it's a nice friendly place to work. That's always the goal, but it's like anything anything with deadlines, occasionally it gets a little bit fraught.
Especially, yeah, buying time, running up to Christmas.
Absolutely.
Especially because you're now as well doing a more seasonal product, because obviously the accessories was non-seasonal, albeit a lot of it was gifty stuff for Christmas.
But absolutely.
Outerwear, you're going to have real big peak.
Yes,
downtime.
But that's what's great about having this range of client size and still having the standardized units with the very low minimums, is we can really map that out. We know when our busy times are and when they're not. And because of that market with the accessories, they're often at the wrong times compared to the jacket seasonal stuff. So really, we'll be making the big bulk jacket orders probably from, you know, March through the summer. And then that will taper off as we then do all the mad rush Christmas stuff. As we even do, there's a couple of clients that we've grown with now that we do all their distribution as well. So it's stuff made effectively on demand.
Right, okay.
2 week turnaround time, and then it goes straight
out. You're shipping from here?
Yeah.
Direct to the consumer?
Absolutely.
Gosh, that's a complicated string to add to your bow.
It is. But again, we've been very much about trying to make this work for those brands, and some of them need that service. But it means, you know, 2 weeks before Christmas, it's chaos. It's all little small orders. But what's great is it means we can then work that workflow around, because no one's going to be ordering a 1,000 jackets.
No, that's true. Yeah.
In December. So it's that thing.
So you can then take your staff off the jacket production line.
Exactly.
And
be really
shipping.
Canny about how we do all those bits and pieces. So it's very much a moving space. And that's why it's set up in the way it is as well. If we can, depending on what orders are coming in, we can shift stuff around in there really quickly to make it work for those orders. It means that clients have to be a bit more receptive to that, and particularly with the payment terms and things like that. It's not, you're never going to get that, we'll front the cost of it and then you pay on delivery.
So
it's much more of a partnership. But again, if you're bringing people in early and going through that conversation with them and about the development and the brand development and the product development as well, we hope that that relationship gives people confidence that that's the way we should be doing it, so that everyone
pays up front, basically.
Yes, effectively. Yeah. It might be in installments at different stages, but most of that money is going to be through. There's very little pay on delivery unless we've got a very good deal with you and you're doing a lot of units with us. But it's, again, we can be very careful about how we work that for clients. But I think that's important for the whole sector. You know, there's so many factors, you know, that have gotten real trouble going down that road, and we're not going to do it for that reason. It's for our safety and for the safety of all the brands we work with as well. We need to still be here.
Yeah, exactly.
In 10 years' time. And that's all about doing that right.
Brilliant. Love it. Well, it's certainly an amazing place. I'm so glad I got to hop in. Brilliant. Thank you very much for seeing us.
No problem at all. Great to show you around.
Yeah.